Welcome to Hungry Authors, the show for aspiring authors who will stop at nothing to accomplish their writing and publishing dreams.
We're your hosts, Liz and Ariel, and we're honored that you're here. Let's dive in. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Hungry Authors podcast. Today is a very special episode because we have our agent, Dawn Pape, here. If you've been around our community for any length of time, you have probably heard Ariel and I tell some version of the Hungry Authors origin story and how she and I came to meet, came to have the idea for the book, came to decide on traditional publishing and seek representation and, you know, everything that came after that. Well, Dawn is here to talk about that very important piece of how we actually ended up getting published. So, Dawn, why don't you go ahead and just introduce yourself and give our listeners like a 60-second sort of, you know, background on you and, you know, what you do.
Sure. So I'm based in Colorado Springs, Colorado. I jokingly refer to coming here on a 9-month contract 25 years ago. I was working with Doubleday in Toronto, Doubleday Books in Toronto, and they were starting a religious imprint in Colorado called Waterbrook Press. And so I came down on it was originally 6 to 9 months. We fell in love with it, stayed here. And so, and then fast forward in 2020, COVID year, decided to get out of the editorial side of publishing and launch in 2021, January of 21, Pape Commons, a gathering of voices, of new voices, which is a literary agency. But I as you know, I've sort of built it on a community. Yes, I'm a literary agent, but I call myself a curator of creatives. I think it diffuses the sort of the crass commercialism of it. And I work with a lot of hungry authors, and I believe that when I got your proposal, I thought, oh, this is a book I want all of my clients to read, because, you know, there's so much pressure, as you know, in bringing a proposal, or if you're a writer bringing something to a publisher, and they're looking at not the content, but at your social media platform and your presence on TikTok and all that. And the content kind of gets lost. And so you really have to be hungry and scrappy and aggressive and determined. And what I have found in 30 plus years of being in publishing, you know, there are hobby writers that go to writers' conferences as a vacation or just to sort of share their poetry over a meal. And that said respectfully. But then there are others that are really concerned about their craft, developing their voice, and writing and learning and bettering, and they're hungry and they want to you know, better themselves as writers and as authors. So I actually, it's funny because I was looking at your spreadsheet this morning and looking, my gosh, we sent this to 30 editors, 18 rejected us. Many, I won't mention publishers' names or editors' names, didn't respond. And all it takes, you know, like I tell everyone, all it takes is that one editor, right, that responds, mm-hmm. and says, I want this. And mm-hmm. so here we are today on the cusp. You know, we've got a book, we've got a cover, we've got a street date.
That's right.
Yeah. And we went to press. I don't think you were on that email, but we got an email like 2 days ago that said the book went to press and we should have copies in a month.
Crazy. Yeah. And possibly a new acquisition, right? Like that's still, I don't want to get too much into the weeds, but I mean, the recent news this week of Roman and Littlefield, it's kind of like, wow, what's happening? So, so exciting.
Yeah, definitely. And for our listeners, what Dawn's referring to right there is we just learned that Roman and Littlefield, who is our publisher, was acquired by Bloomsbury, which is a much larger publisher. And Bloomsbury, Dawn, Bloomsbury is an independent publisher, right? Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So they've acquired a smaller, kind of more professional academic publisher, which is Roman and Littlefield. So we're still kind of in the, you know, waiting period right now of like, well, how is that going to impact our book? I mean, our book has gone to press. So, you know, not too much can change at this point. And we feel a little bit relieved of like, okay, well, you know, nothing is stopping. But it is always interesting when an acquisition happens between publishers. And I'm curious, because you've been in this industry for a long time. So how have you seen acquisitions like that impact books?
Well, I mean, it is. I just heard from an editor at Roman and Littlefield this morning, not ours, but another editor. I'm working on another project. And, you know, it's always the voice that of reason is it's business as usual, right? Because you don't want to miss a beat. I myself have been part of an acquisition when I was at Random House at Waterbrook. We acquired Harold Shaw Publishers in Chicago. And that's how I had the privilege of working with Madeline L'Engle, for example. But, you know, that was a transition where I remember all too well going up to Chicago, meeting with the staff, telling them their jobs were going to be lost in some cases. Mm-hmm. Others, we were acquiring and moving them. The office was going to be closed. And that obviously didn't happen overnight. So there was a lot of archival stuff, contracts, all that kind of stuff, the transitions. You know, I look fast forward to 25 years later, much of that list is now, the imprint has disappeared, and many of those titles that were under Harold Shaw, an imprint of Waterbrook Press, are now part of the Convergent line from Penguin Random House. I was also part of the BDD group, Bantam Doubleday Dell group, when they were acquired by Random House. And of course, in the Penguin Random House merger, they all take time because you've got infrastructures, you've got overlaps, you know, you've got one set of contracts, another set of contracts, you've got a distribution, all that. So it's a long process. Yeah. The main thing and so the question isn't going to be quickly answered. You know, is it going to be a Bloomsbury imprint or is it going to be RL Publishing Group kind of thing? Yeah. But it's exciting. You know, Bloomsbury is British-based, a British-based worldwide publisher. I think that's how they call themselves, with a U.S. presence. And of course, the Bloomsbury name comes from the county or the area in Britain where they're based. And of course, some of your listeners or readers will know that in recent years, or probably the last year, they've been cash infused with Sarah Moss.
Yes.
Best-selling title that has really kind of taken them up a notch. So, but it's a good name. It's a literary. Yeah. Also, when you say Bloomsbury, there's sort of it's like Knopf, or, you know, there's some names that you throw out there and go, oh, Bloomsbury. Okay. So there's a gravitas to it.
Yeah. Well, wasn't Virginia Woolf part of like the Bloomsbury writing group back at, you know, that was kind of one of those like literary salon type writing groups in the 1920s, I think. I'm reaching far back into my my English major day classes.
I will agree with you.
Pull that out.
I'm a poli sci major doing publishing, so
okay. So how did you get into publishing then? So you're a poli sci major, but what kind of led you to the publishing world?
I'm not a poster boy for 18-year-old high school grads that are trying to figure out what to do, because I changed my major every year in college. I entered as a psych major, then went to English major, and then graduated with a poli sci degree. My intention was, I'd like to go into diplomatic corps and travel worldwide and work in an embassy someplace. My father spoke 7 languages. I speak 3. And I thought, you know, I could put a language to good use. But somewhere along the line, I got a book bug. I worked in Toronto and I could make some extra money with the company I worked with. They had a publishing division, and you could make extra money in the holidays working in their warehouse, picking and packing and shipping books. And I got the bug. You know, that's where I first started smelling books and looking at paper and going, oh, that's cream and bright white and all that kind of silly stuff. And that's how I got into it. I started in the warehouse, worked over to graphic design. I was designing posters and that. And then that worked my way into marketing. I was a music and video buyer for a chain that no longer exists in the U.S. and Canada. I was a music video buyer, and then through that connection, it's all a labyrinth. Got hired as a marketing person for a distribution company in Canada, and then started working with some different imprints, became known. And then as I said, I was working for Doubleday in Toronto and helping them kind of work with some religious titles in distribution in Canada. And then that moved us to the US and working at Waterbrook, where I was a first a consultant and then segued into working in marketing and sales, and then became the publisher for Harold Shaw. And then one fateful day, literally got told I was appointed the publisher of Waterbrook Press and became the publisher there. Working for Eric Major originally, and then Steve Rubin and Michael Paugon. And I mentioned those names because I know that you got, before he passed, you got to interview Steve Rubin. So yeah, that's a really quick track as to my publishing career. And then I've worked in a variety of religious faith-based publishing houses. And like I said, in 2020, decided I sort of was done on that side and wanted to represent new voices. Primarily because I wanted, it was COVID inspired, I guess. But truthfully, I look back on it now and I think, whoa, that was a good decision. If my wife was here, she said no regrets. But it is also choosing to represent authors and writers in probably one of the most volatile times in publishing. I mean, COVID transitioned so much of the industry, and changed. Social media has transpired and become a bigger thing, all that. And so a lot of it is good, but a lot of it just elicits hungry author behavior because you do, gone are the days of, oh, I can just send a proposal to an editor and get a book deal. No, you have to work, craft a really strong proposal, which you did, and then have all the other elements that weren't, TikTok didn't exist 5 years ago, Instagram and Facebook and all of that, and that has really, DEI, that phenomena has occurred. So many factors are now shaping and informing publishing decision that never existed 5 years ago, 10 years ago.
You might have noticed that Hungry Authors has had a bit of a glow up lately. One of the best investments we've made has been in hiring Goldschlag Design to help us create attractive graphics, slides, invites to our book launch party, and digital products that are aligned with the Hungry Authors brand. Michelle Goldschlag founded Goldschlag Design specifically to help busy women juggling marriage, children, and entrepreneurship. She has helped us take so much off of our plate. If you're looking for help with your design needs, there are three ways to work with Michelle. First, you can hire Michelle as your personal coach to develop and refine your digital design work in-house. You can submit one-off projects with a quick turnaround, or you could get unlimited designs every month with her subscription program. We're part of her subscription program, and the value that we've received has been incredible. But space is limited. Hop on over to goldschlagdesign.com today to snag your spot alongside us.
Totally. I know that early on in our publishing journey, we had a few conversations about just sort of lamenting, like, platform, what does it mean? Nobody knows. How big do you have to be? Nobody knows. When people turn you down because of platform and you say, okay, great, how many new followers do I have to say get? They don't really tell you. It's interesting. I mean, we have lots of conversations about platform on this podcast too, and you can see the hold both things true that, like, I understand publishers need to make money. This is a business. They're fairly risk averse. They want to invest in people who they know can sell, and most of those people already have an audience. But then also, like, there are new voices, like you're so passionate about, and there are people who do, like, just want to write. They don't want to do the whole build a thing and, whatever. And so I don't know. Tell me, like, about some of your thoughts on that now, especially like Paper Commons, like being what it is and growing. Like, I don't know. Do you think platform is, as important as it's ever been? Are we sort of going, are we moving back to that being less important? I don't know. Like, how do you see that right now?
Well, I think it's overrated. We all know stories of authors that got a book deal because they had, a million and a half followers on TikTok or Instagram or whatever. Publisher comes to the table with six-figure advance, and a book sells less than 10,000 copies. You Google it, and you can find those stories. And so that is our reality. I think, with also the demise of brick and mortar, it's made it harder. But I take I find some encouragement in knowing that brick and mortar is independent bookstores are being revived, and they are sort of like there's hungry authors and hungry booksellers, right? And I think they're recognizing. I mean, one of the authors I represent, she and her husband, they just bought a bookstore in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, called Nooks. Shout out to Sean and Miley. And there they are. They know that they can't carry all the books. They don't have the breadth of an Amazon, but they know their community. They know they could give, they're doing a Thursday morning story time for kids. So moms, like you, Liz, who have two kids, oh great, I can fill my 11 to 12 hour with a story time at Nooks kind of thing. They're carrying some really cool stuff. I mean, I just ordered some stuff I'd never seen before that they had in their shop. I thought, oh, that's really cool. So they're a bookstore and a community hub and all that, knowing their audience and their consumers. So that's kind of cool, right? And Ariel, it's looking like you want to jump in with a question or a comment.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm curious when you talk to editors, when you're pitching a book to some of these publishers, are you still seeing a lot of them come back with responses that say, like, no, I really want to see a bigger platform, more social media numbers? Or are you seeing, I'm just curious, like, what are rejections looking like right now?
They're very gracious. And with all due respect to my editor friends, they're often not telling the whole truth.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. I can get on this soapbox. I won't. I'll let you finish. But oh my gosh, do I have thoughts about this? Okay, go.
The number, because I'm interacting with editors, and the number of editors that say, "Don, I love this project, but then I took it to my pub board." And inevitably, but sales and marketing saw that their platform wasn't big enough. And so I have said it publicly, so I guess I'm at the risk of saying it here. I think a lot of the sales and marketing and individuals have lived through a certain time where they could just write their purchase orders. It was okay, I'll walk in and get 100 copies of Danielle Steele, 100 copies of John Grisham, yada yada. And now it's so much harder. The salespeople and the marketing people have to figure out, okay, how do I market this book now with all these different niches that I have to take this book to? Like it used to be, I'd have a book, it would show up in, bookstore journal or, some kind of thing that everyone would read and go, oh, I need to get it. Now it's, you've got cigar aficionado that would carry a book for cigar lovers, and then you've got all that, right? So marketing is a lot tougher. You've got, should we do something on Instagram? What do we do with banners on Amazon? All that kind of stuff. So marketing is hard. Then sales, it's like, okay, now I know, have to figure out how do I pitch hungry authors specifically to my stores in Nebraska versus my stores in South Carolina, or in sort of an artsy community like Savannah, Georgia, or whatever. So you have to work harder. But we all do. And I think that would be my challenging salvo to all of the publishing houses and sales and marketing and editorial is, yeah, it's a whole lot harder. But Think of the discovery of new voices. I was talking to a friend of mine who was in retail, religious retail, 25 years ago, and I just sent him the recent best-selling list, and he was astounded. He's been out doing some business leadership consulting with Levi and a lot of different places, but he was astonished. He looked at the list that I sent him, and he said, "Don, these are all authors I would sell 25 years ago." And I think, yes, I think in the general trade, forget the religious market, in the general trade, there's a little bit more. But when you do look at those lists, there's a lot of new, of old names that are still there. And hurrah for all those authors. But when it comes to my role, I'm so interested in discovering new authors, frankly, that like yourselves, I'd say, okay, hungry authors could have a run of the next 10, 15, 20 years with their voice, because this author is now in their mid-80s, or 90s or whatever. So let allow, and we have seen that, thankfully, with diversity, allowing Black authors to come to the table, Asian authors coming to the table, South Asian authors, Hispanic authors. And I say hurrah because we want that it's been too homogenous at this time. Now I look at our screen and we're all white. I also think that new white voices need to be at the table as well. But yeah, that's some of my thoughts. And I think, again, to tie in with Pape Commons, my desire has been, how do we build a community for writers where they can find encouragement when it is a really discouraging place to be?
I think you do that very, very well. I mean, you've got kind of monthly meetings for all of us, which are really cool, and you have all of these amazing industry professionals who come and speak to everyone. So that is a very very cool thing that you do that I think is very different from a lot of literary agents. But I hear you kind of saying, there's this like push and pull because on one hand, a lot of the bestsellers are still the same old folks, and on the other hand, we have a lot of people in publishing who are pushing really hard for new voices and who are really, urgently acquiring, new voices across racial lines and topics and everything. Like there are so many very cool initiatives happening throughout the publishing industry. But it is still really hard for people to break in. And I'm wondering, like, do you think some of those old names are still selling because readers are just more familiar with them? And so we somehow in the industry have to do a better job of getting our readers, excited about new voices.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you've seen that, right? With in fiction, for example, romantasy, where a lot of new voices that no one has ever heard of have found, fandom, and those people have mobilized to tell you about, Yarrows and Moss and, all that category, and it's exploded because there's a grassroots group out there. But you have to work harder. You have to somehow, Rebecca Yarros, for example, I'm going to use her because she's a hometown gal. When her second book came out through Barnes and Noble here locally, she did like a midnight launch that, they moved 500 copies of her book like that. And I think there's opportunity there, but you have to, you wouldn't want to do a midnight event every Tuesday of the month. That would exhaust you. Never mind, you'd have a lot of sleepy staff the following day. But you just have to be creative and figure out, okay, how, because there are, that's the other thing. I was looking at, I think it's Publishers Lunch this week. There was a line about the new titles on Tuesday, and then they were saying, there are 96 new fiction titles releasing in May, 142 in June, and so on. When you realize that as a consumer, like think about 96 books here just in the fiction category on your screen, and you're kind of going, which one do I pick. Oh, Danielle Steele. I remember her. Okay, I'll take her because I don't recognize these names. And that's where I think that's where the indies have succeeded. When you walk into like a tattered cover, I'm introduced to a number of authors. I'm looking at a book I have here by Lo Patrick. I wouldn't have known of her writing as good as it is. It's like the woman who wrote When the Crawdads Sing. It's every bit as good as her. I didn't know about her, but I met her through, I say I met her. I met her through a staff person at Tattered Cover, for example. Introduce, have you read this book? It's an amazing author, yada yada. And so I think, yeah, I just think that's key.
Well, and this reminds me of a larger conversation I've been really interested in lately that's mostly happening around media like movies and TV shows, but I think applies the same to books, which is like the death of monoculture. Like the internet and social media, obviously there's, plenty of positive things to say about it. But one of the things that it's done that might not even be negative, it's just a neutral thing that's happened. As an elder millennial, I find it negative, but maybe the younger generations
I
think
was
it's
going to say,
great.
you're starting to show your age.
I know, right? It's like, why don't we have water cooler moments anymore? But it's like the death of monoculture. I was listening to a conversation the other day where they're talking about where there aren't really movie stars anymore, like, Julie Roberts or Brad Pitt. And it's not because there aren't movie stars anymore. Of course there are. It's that the internet and social media has created so many subsects of people that there isn't like a broad monoculture. It's not like we're all watching the same shows on Thursday night on NBC anymore. That doesn't happen. Like, there's amazing television coming out, but we all are so kind of divided into these smaller groups. There isn't a mono thick conversation happening anymore. And I think it's the same around books, where it's like you said, it's harder to get in front of more of people because we're like so siloed that there isn't really like any like mono thing happening anymore in any like section of media. And so yeah,
It's
it's
true.
like
I
you
mean,
have a
even when you look at Publishers Marketplace, more often than not, they're comparing this book acquisition is like Pen 15 met Strange Things, or this is like When the Crawdads Sing coupled with John Grisham's legal thriller, The Firm. Like everything we pitch is somehow related. Most often related to movies and film and Netflix series or whatever. No one's saying, in the tradition of Virginia Woolf or in the style of Steinbeck or from the depths of Solzhenitsyn's heart comes this new novel from a Ukrainian. Like, there's none of that. It's all, I find it annoying personally because, and I think you may have received an email from me where I said, hey, to help some editors, we may need to pick, and I think this is particularly true for fiction, but I often see it. This is like Jon Krakauer's Into Thin Air meets, whatever, and they reference some documentary or whatever. But it's all very, it's not just about the books. It's now we're taking a little bit of film, TV, binging, and all that to help that 26-year-old graduate from Columbia get it, right? Because they don't know what you're talking about when you say, oh, I saw the last episode of Bob Newhart.
Well, and we're all getting
MASH was a TV series?
our news and our entertainment from so many different sources these days. It's not like we're all kind of sitting down and like consuming the same thing. So,
No, and it's so, like, to your point, like, I'm 65 and I grew up where I'd watch a show on Tuesday. And that would be it. It'd be an hour-long show. And then you'd go, ah, I gotta wait till next Tuesday. Now it's like, okay, I'll carve up Saturday morning and I'll watch 8 hours of some blessed Netflix series. Like, who does that? But we do.
Well, and I mean, this is why I think authors, one of the many reasons why authors have to be so hungry now, because there is, I mean, and when we say hungry authors, most of the time we are just meaning hungry in the sense of trying to get published. But actually, it goes much further than that, because once your book is published, you still have to maintain that very scrappy mentality in order to get your book in front of all of those different, you know, groups of people, people's eyeballs. You have to be in the TikTok communities and the Instagram community and the newsletter scene and Substack. And you've got to be, you know, doing all of these things to promote your book. You've got to be doing the webinars and the professional associations. And you have to have such a diverse strategy now. There's no advertising in the New York Times is going to hit most of the country, so you can just do that and call it a day. You've got to do all of these different things now to get your book in front of people's eyeballs.
Yeah. If you're hungry, you have to be voracious for life. And, you know, you can't just, because it is true, you're hungry to shape that amazing proposal. You got to be hungry to find the right author. You've got to be hungry to write the right book, get the content right. And then you got to be hungry to go sell the book. I mean, you know, there used to be a day when an author would lob the book to the editor, the publisher would bring it out, and the author would literally turn around to write their next book. That still exists for names, right? Like the Baldacci's and the Daniel Steeles and Grishams of the world. They have the luxury of a history, of a track record to be able to do that. But for hungry authors that are the most of the newcomers, you know, you have to think about, because then when the book streets, you know, once upon a time, the book would come out and everyone would know about it. And then, you know, in August, let's say, when your book releases, and then by October, they were talking about the next big thing, right? Hungry authors have to recognize my book is coming out in August or September. I'm going to be peddling that thing for the next 12 to 16 to 18 months, because thousands of people don't know about it. When the book comes out, maybe 100 people in Tennessee and South Carolina have heard about it, but nobody else in the world does. So you've got to keep peddling, you know, literally, the book. And I've been part of bestsellers, and I think one of the assumptions we make in publishing is that that book's on the bestseller, everybody must know about it. That's not true, you know, and we're not talking about just picking on Sheboygan where people don't know. We're talking about people in Atlanta and New York City that don't know about it, right? So hungry authors have to be mindful of that. It's not, okay, in the next 30 days, I'm going to promote it, and on launch week, like, there's been so much focus on pre-launch and launch week and all that. That has been good and helpful, but you have to think about the long tail of this release. And okay, the book came out on this particular Tuesday in the month of August, but I'm going to have to peddle it on Sunday, you know, in November.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ariel and I were just talking this morning. Obviously, we're gearing up for a launch in 2.5 months, and you know, we've enlisted help from a phenomenal book publicist who has been great. And also, we are deeply rooted in the industry, and still we're pretty clueless about like what's going to actually work. You know what I mean? Like, we were talking this morning, we're, you know, trying to schedule a bunch of stuff for launch week. And then we're like, let's, you know, do what we can, but also like, it's not just about launch week, especially with a book like ours, where yes, like we know pre-orders matter and we want to have a big week for a lot of different reasons, but like, we're not really running a New York Times best-selling campaign. We are building a brand for the long term. This is something we'll be talking about for the next however many years of our career. So like, just to take a little bit of the pressure off of everything, boils down to that first week, you know what I mean? Those first few weeks, like, and I think sometimes when we talk to our clients too about what book idea do they want to write first? You know, like Ariel always says, like, well, this is just your first book. Like, if you want to be an author, think of it as like, this is a long-term game. Then, you know, this is just your first book. And what do you want to talk about for the next 10 years? Because to be a successful author, you're going to have to talk about it for the next 10 years, you know? Hey, friends, it's that time again. If you've been wanting to learn about our bespoke book mapping process that has helped hundreds of authors plan and write the book of their dreams, we have good news. Registration is now open for our next Map Your Book cohort, which runs July 9th through August 6th. In 5 teaching sessions and weekly workshops, we'll help you figure out your book's transformation and teach you how to map out your entire book chapter by chapter. Book mapping is the invisible matrix that makes a book work. We're going to teach you how to see it and how to do it for your own book. Head to mapyourbook.com to learn more and sign up for our July cohort.
I think there's so many things that have come to mind, Liz, when you were saying that. I think authors have to be very flexible. You can't just go with, oh, I'm going to do a book signing at Barnes & Noble and boom, check it off. I've done my launch. You know, I had an author that released a book on Tuesday. He did an Instagram at 9 o'clock in the morning and then another one at 4 o'clock. And at first I thought, oh gosh, he did it 2 in one day. But he did it because he had a group of people that were available at 9 o'clock in the morning in mountain time. And then another group, totally different people in 4 o'clock. But that's only people who would have Instagram live. Then he had to think about, you know, when do I do a book signing? And which of the tattered covers in my area should I do it at? Should I do Aspen Grove or Colfax? Or, you know, what, like, there's so many things that authors have to juggle and think about. You know, with my book, do I do, you know, offer it as part of a day away in Chattanooga? Or do I do it in a tea room from 3 to 5? Or, like, yeah, you have to think, the consumer for my book isn't just this one avatar. It's like all these avatars. And I have to go at the, and that I think has made it much more challenging too for authors, because they have to think really outside the box. It used to be like 20 years ago, a book would come out and you'd say, it'll be at the bookstore, right? And there'd be Walden Books and Barnes & Noble and all kinds of other chains and independents out there. Now it's like, well, it's going to be on Amazon and it's going to be, you know, is some independent, but I it's so perplexing.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot to think about, a lot to manage. So first of all, I want to give a shout out to our friend Meredith, because Meredith is the one who actually introduced us to you and made that email connection for us. But I was wondering, and I say this because I was thinking of Meredith, and Meredith has a brand new book out called The Artist's Joy, and Meredith is someone that you represent as well. And I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about the other hungry authors that you represent, and maybe, some of the exciting books that you have, coming out from Pape Commons this summer.
Sure. Well, the Artist's Joy that you referenced is, gosh, I should have my list of release dates here, because I don't. It's coming out shortly. I want to say it's June 9th.
Yeah, I think it's like in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, it's got a stunningly gorgeous. I've got my copies here, so it's in the warehouse. It's shipping. Yeah. I'm very excited about that. There's a book that is coming. I'm terrible with titles, so you caught me kind of with my pants down, but no, it's all good. Rebecca McNeil has a book that's coming out called This Is Going to Hurt. It's a great book for election year and just kind of thinking through, you know, being civil when you have different opinions about topics. That's coming out here this summer. It's called This Is Going to Hurt by Becca McNeil. She's a journalist in San Antonio, done amazing work in that sphere. And this is her second book, actually. She was just in Chicago speaking in front of a bunch of press, the press association there, and talking about her book and hopefully picking up some interview opportunities there. Have another book from an author in Canada who's a psychologist called Rebecoming, an amazing book. And I want to put a pause here, because that's an example of a book that we took out and nobody wanted it. It was sort of like, well, this is a psychologist. She's in Canada. Nobody will know her. She has no platform, yada, yada. And again, all we needed to do is find that one editor that read it and was charmed with the book. I have another book that didn't come out this summer, came out in February of this year, called The Grief Room. And here's another interesting story about a hungry author that you probably already know this story because I told it so many times. But this is a woman who reached out to me, again, kind of a referral, reached out to me and said, "Hey, I lost my sister to cancer several years ago. I'm a pastor in Canada. I've written this book." And I pitched it to an editor who said to me, "Don, she's Canadian, she's a female pastor and writing about grief. Three strikes, you're out." I thought, "Oh, great.
Oh my goodness.
This is going to be a challenge." I said to her, "So you need to find some way to find a presence, whether it's a newsletter, dance routine on TikTok with your family, do something." So she went on to onto Instagram, and her presence there is the period grieving the period room, and she has a presence there. When she reached and talked about, put a lot of postings just about that whole topic of grief and how to address it and talk about it. When she hit, she went from 0 to 10,000. When she hit 10,000, a marketing individual at a press, actually Meredith's Press, Broadleaf, it hit her radar. She told an editor, "You need to check this Leanne author person out on Instagram. She has literally been on there for 3 months and has this huge following, and she's writing about grief. And it has a different voice, a different perspective, somewhat pastoral, but sisterly, all that kind of stuff. Kind of like I come alongside of you." It's an amazing book. Great, great book. I would recommend. On that topic, she's now at around 32,000 followers.
Well,
And
I'm looking at her right now. It's 30 over 36,000.
there we go.
Holy
Awesome.
cow. That's
She,
amazing.
yeah. So, I mean, I tell that story because it can be done. You know, you have to be hungry, tenacious, disciplined, determined. And I think one of the challenges for hungry authors is to say, "Okay, I'm on Pinterest for the next 60 days and nothing has happened." Well, give it a break. Like, you just have to, keep doing it. And I think back to Meredith, we're looking at another proposal or another project. You just have to be willing to say, go out with a proposal and say, "Oh, maybe that's not it. Maybe it's this." Just this morning, working with another hungry author who had a book come out in the spring called God Speaks Science. We had another book kind of lined up that we thought, okay, this is sort of a natural book proposal. And it wasn't. And it was funny because he posted something on Instagram this past week where when I read it, I thought, that's his next book. But I didn't have the guts to tell him that. But thankfully, this morning, he had the same epiphany and said, "Hey, I've been thinking, I don't think the book we're pitching is the right one. How about so Monday of next week, we'll do a Zoom and talk about what he and I have landed on, just thinking about," and that's, I guess I'm telling that story again, that sometimes we have to flex, right? And go, I love that story. I was really passionate about that project. But as the more I think about it, the more we've sort of processed that, even getting feedback, quite frankly. I mean, again, to tell another story from the roster, had an author who had pitched a book towards a certain consumer. And as we talked to a couple of editors, they said, "You're pigeonholing this book towards this person. Have you thought about pitching it to this person?" And both the author and I were like, "Yeah, you're wow." And so we reconfigured the proposal, changed the audience, made the primary audience a tertiary audience, and moved up a tertiary, the primary, kind of unpacked that quite a bit more. And we actually, hopefully, fingers crossed, touch wood, all those things, get an offer. But we had to flex, and I think that's one of the challenges of, when you're told your baby is cute, but gosh, she would look better in gingham. "Oh yeah, but don't you like paisley?"
Yeah, that is That is always hard for hungry authors. Well,
Yeah.
we'll have to put the links to all of those books in our show notes so that people can get them. But I mean, you've shared a lot of incredible advice for hungry authors. What else comes to mind? Any other, final thoughts? Anything in particular that you are looking for right now? Like, who would be the dream hungry author to email you right now?
Oh,
Maybe they're listening.
that's a terrible question, because I think every author that approaches me, oh, this is an idea. And I mean, one of the challenges I'm having, truthfully, for your audience is I'm learning. When I started this, I took everything that came my way, and I'm trying. This is true for all hungry authors as much as it is to literary agents, to be disciplined and say, yeah, this is a good project, but Don, it's not for you. Recommend some other agent or wish them well and encourage them in some form or fashion. I don't like saying no. One thing I will say to every author is you have to have patience, because one key difference has been in the last several years, where several years ago I was an agent for a large agency. I worked with a number of other agents. We would send out proposals. And within 30 days, sometimes 45 days, we would be ringing a bell because we got the offer and woohoo, someone responded. I'm receiving emails in response to stuff in May that I had sent out in November. And it's very nice letters from emails. Don, sorry, I got busy, and I get all that. But it's the waiting period. And so, when you ask about that, I'm looking for an author who is willing to be hungry, who's serious about their craft. And when I say serious about being hungry, they're willing to work on their social media platform, whatever it may be. It doesn't mean you have to be on TikTok, Pinterest, Instagram, X, that whole beachfront. Just pick one. Maybe it's Substack. I think Substack is, although it's suddenly the it girl, right? Everyone's talking about Substack, but it is something you can manage and control and be disciplined about and say, every Wednesday I'm going to release something and build my numbers. And I want, I've got 100 now, but my goal by end of summer is I'm up to 2,500 or whatever the reasonable number is. And then work towards that.
I mean, it's good parting advice too that I know a lot of writers, aspiring authors, they just like to write, and they like the creative part of that, and they like the head down, typing away on the computer part. And so do I. Like Ariel and I both lamented recently, like, oh, like the book launching and the strategizing, it's for some of us, it's not as fun. We don't, when you envision your life, your career as an author, that's not the part that you always think about. But if you
Yeah, I mean,
care.
the hardest thing I have, Liz, is as an agent getting something, a submission. I've already agreed to represent them, and we talk it through, and then they send the sample chapters, and my comment is, "Oh, this isn't ready for prime time. It's good, but we're not going to be able to send it out as part of your samples, your chapter samples." So here's what you need to do. And I think we even had that with our book, your book, where we had a chapter and we reorganized it, or you got into it, you were realizing the voice wasn't right, all that. And yet again, you just have to be flexible in that regard.
And if you care enough about your work and your message, you do have to be willing to self-promote and talk about it publicly. And, like as much as it is, might be, rewarding or whatever, more enjoyable to just like hole up and do your writerly thing. Like the reality of being an author these days is it's more than just that. You have to be willing to be public about it in some way. It doesn't mean you have to compromise your values or do things you hate all day long. But if you care enough about your career and about your message, you do have to promote it,
Yeah. There's and yeah, that's so true. And you know, oftentimes people will think, oh, I'll never get on Oprah, you know, or Reese Witherspoon will never hear about, but well, that's at that level, right? Like, be realistic about it. What can you do? You know, start with locally. You know, can you, like, I'm amazed how many authors don't tap into their independent bookstores that are in their backyard and just say, well, you know, you've got a tattered cover just 5 minutes from your house, or you've got Barnes and Noble, you know, all that. Yes, it in you know, one of our authors at Pape Commons, you know, he called 400 Barnes and Nobles in California, Arizona, and Nevada just to pitch his book because he had to. You know, one could say, well, he has a publishing house. Yeah, he did, but they, you know, they're talking corporate at this level. You know, he was calling the actual buyer at the local store. And you know, I have another story where an author lived minutes away from Parnassus in Nashville. It's their neighborhood bookstore. They walked over to Parnassus, said, hey, I've got a book coming out in March. Who's it with? HarperCollins. Okay, we've got an account with them. Great. Can we do an event? They did an event. They had 125 people there. Amazing. You know, but what did it take? It meant walking to the bookstore. You know, first time you get there, oh, the person that plans events isn't here today. They're back here on Thursday. Oh, okay, so I gotta walk back here. You know, it does take work. So,
It's the persistence and the hunger.
yep,
That's right.
the hungry, hungry,
Yep.
hungry like a wolf was that famous song, right?
Exactly. All right, Don. Well, thank you so much again for joining us today, for taking a chance on us, for saying yes to our proposal. We are forever grateful for you.
And tell your listeners, when does your Hungry Authors book release?
August 6th. So go pre-order it right now. As of when this episode comes out, you've got a few more weeks. So
That's right. And buy two, buy one for you and buy one to give to a hungry author in the making.
thank you for listening to today's episode. If you're a hungry author and you want to learn more about our community and courses, head over to hungryauthors.com. Remember, you have a story and a message worth sharing, and if you've got the hunger, you can make it happen.